This is the Education Exchange with Paul Peterson. I am the senior editor at Education X. Thank you for joining us. In every state, a child must attend a school at least through eighth grade. The Supreme Court has never given parents the right to let their children avoid an education altogether. But it's also the case that in every state, some children are being homeschooled. The percentage of homeschoolers has steadily increased in the 21st century. And the practice clearly escalated during the COVID pandemic, but there is only limited factual information on the amount and quality of homeschooling that's actually taking place. To give parents, educators, and lawmakers more accurate information, Angela Watson, a professor at Johns Hopkins University, has opened the Homeschooling Hub, which is devoted to providing the best available information on school laws governing homeschooling in every state. I am pleased to have Angela Watson with me on the Education Exchange today. Angela, thank you very much for joining me on the Education Exchange.
Hello, Paul. Thank you very much for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, I'd like to ask you a lot of questions about homeschooling, but first I wanted to ask you about your new website, Homeschooling Hub. Why have you recreated this tool for parents and for many other people?
Right. So I like to always start off these conversations by talking a little bit about some of the percentages that you alluded to. So the national estimate right now for homeschool participation is about 4.5% of all K-12 age children in the country. We think that's probably underreported, so it could be higher, maybe 5 to 6%. And to put that in context, only 7% of students attend charter schools and 9% of U.S. K-12 age students attend private schools. So compared to these other sectors, we're talking about a really large number of students, and people oftentimes don't understand that when you talk about percentages. So, you know, you alluded to the increase during the pandemic. Because of the increased number and because of the difficulty in researching this group of students, we created the Homeschool Hub, which is basically just a catalog of information and data from all 50 states, because homeschooling is regulated at the state level and every state is different. So we brought all of that information together and put it together in one basket. So anyone wanting to find out information on homeschooling in Texas versus Michigan can quickly come to our site and find that information in a matter of minutes, instead of having to go state by state to the different sources within those states and trying to figure it out themselves. So
maybe a lawmaker in one state will say, I wonder what they're doing in my neighboring states, or what is happening around the country? Are we unusual in our state, or are we pretty much doing what everybody else is doing? How much variation do you see across states?
It's massive. The variation is unbelievable. So when we created the hub, I had to go through and read all of the rules and regulations and legislation for all of the states. And literally there is no state that is doing the same thing as another state. And to your point, we have had stakeholders, state legislators contacting us, asking us that exact question. What does Louisiana do versus Oklahoma versus Missouri, right? And as people are trying to think about updating their policies, or they're receiving lots of questions about increases in homeschoolers, we've already had a lot of feedback from the states about the research.
So what's your example of the state that is the most permissive? You can do whatever you want if you're homeschooling.
Right. So there's a batch of about a dozen states that don't collect any information at all and don't require parents to even register. So Texas, we know nothing. Oklahoma, we know nothing. Missouri, we know very little. Right there in the center of the country, Missouri, Illinois, Iowa, we know very, very little about actual homeschooling because they have very few requirements. I won't say no requirements, but very few as far as registration.
So they're really not expecting students to register, and they pretty much can homeschool as they please, as the parent sees fit. Now, some people think that's the best system. Right. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I try to remain pretty agnostic, especially in relation to the hub. We really tried to stay in the middle of the road and not make judgments, just provide information. You know, we have also started a research lab, and in the research lab, we have a little bit more opinion, right? So,
you're really leaving this up to policymakers and parents to decide. You're just trying to inform them so that they can make the best decisions from their perspective. Now, can I ask you about the state that you think has the tightest regulations? Is there two or three states that you think of the most, you have to go through a lot of hoops to, if you want to homeschool your child?
Right. So Pennsylvania is very tight. They actually will give you a school teacher to supervise your curriculum or your instruction of your child. So someone supervises and actually comes into your home, or maybe not as in person now, but originally. New York is also pretty restrictive. You have to go through multiple steps every time you register your child, and it can take weeks and even months. And so parents have to navigate this kind of onerous system. Relatedly, New York has really low homeschool participation, about 1%. And so it's unclear if really not that many people are participating or not that many people are willing to go through and just simply don't report. Massachusetts is interesting because you are, your homeschooling is supervised at the district and even school level. I'm pretty sure it's district. And so, you know, it varies from place to place, even within the state, which makes it also difficult for parents to navigate, and varying regulations or rules from place to place, even within the same state.
Well, how many students are actually registered as homeschoolers across the country, according to the most recent information? What's the number?
So I think it's 4.5% is the federal estimate. And as I say, it's unclear if that is how accurate that is, because those estimates are based on surveys, and the surveys for small groups can be biased in a variety of ways. Then we have the actual state registered counts for the states where we have data, but we don't have data for all of the states. So it's really tricky to try to get any kind of accurate number on homeschooling over time with all of the missing data and problems with reporting.
But how many are registered? Forget how many homeschoolers there are, just how many are registered.
Right. So we have about over a million registered in the 35 states where we have consistent data over time. I'm unsure exactly what percentage that is of the total student body within those 35 states.
Well, that's 1 million is more of 50 million kids. And there's about 50 million kids, I think, across the country. That's more like 2%, not 4.5%. So if you were, maybe that's a little bit of an undercount, but let's say we went to 3% are registered if you include all the states and not just those that you have longitudinal information on. So there must be a lot of homeschoolers who are not registered.
Right. It's unclear. We have been looking at the state registration numbers for the states that we have and comparing them to Pulse survey from the census. They have really rich information on homeschoolers and homeschooler demographic, and we can see it by state, which is kind of unusual in the data. And so when we try to square what Pulse says, right, what families are saying in these Pulse surveys with actual recorded numbers in those states, they don't align. And so we're trying to figure out, either parents are confused and they think they're homeschooling when really they're public schooling, or, you know, these state counts are low. So,
well, a lot of people think that homeschooling was just sort of a jump up during the COVID pandemic when a lot of schools were closed or kids had to learn online and parents didn't think online learning meant much, or maybe they just thought online learning was essentially homeschooling. So you got a lot of reports of an increase. There was one report out there that said 11% of the kids were homeschooling, and I never believed that report. I notice you don't believe it either because you didn't mention that one. So forget the 11%, but 6% seems plausible. Maybe it was a little higher. What do you see as the trend line since the pandemic has receded?
So it was really interesting during the pandemic. You know, we did have the jump, whatever the actual number was. I think everybody pretty much agrees that there was a big increase in homeschooling. The numbers that we have for the 35 states where we have data look like around 40% increase in those states during that time from 2019-20 to 2020-21. And then everyone said that they would go back to normal after things normalized and schools opened back for in-person instruction, et cetera. And so last year, the year after that, and then the last year, we did see slight declines in homeschooling, but it's nowhere near gone back to what it was pre-COVID.
So there's been a steady increase throughout the 21st century, and that increase shows a jump with the pandemic, and that doesn't seem to be going away. So why do you think there is this increase? What's driving the increase in the demand for homeschooling?
I don't know. It's really interesting. So we were interested in looking at 2023-24 data, which is this academic school year, and only 11 states have reported the participation for this school year so far. But in those 11 states, we saw some really interesting outcomes. My prior was that homeschooling would continue to decline, slowly decline off of the pandemic highs or flatten out, right? And the participation would just flatten. What we saw in these 11 states is that 7 of the 11 states are increasing, which was surprising.
Increasing compared to the previous year, right?
Increasing compared to the previous year. Yes. Mm-hmm. So in some states like Florida, even after the pandemic, there was continued increase in homeschooling. So it never dropped off after COVID, but a lot of states dropped off after COVID. What we see this year in just these 11 states that we have data for, 7 of the 11 are increasing. Within those, there are 3 states that are charting the highest numbers ever, which means there are more homeschoolers in those states this year than there were at the peak of the pandemic. That was a really unexpected finding that we're not sure how to explain. Like, clearly, pandemic stressors are not driving that result. There's something new happening.
Yeah, but these are fairly small little changes. I think maybe we shouldn't make too much of little fluctuations from one year to another. I looked at some of your data in preparing it myself for our conversation, and I noticed you made that point, but I feel like it was a little bit of a, maybe a little bit up or middle, maybe a little bit down. So wouldn't you say it's more, we don't really know for sure what the direction is at this point.
Overall, when I averaged them all together, it was only a 1.5% increase over the 11 states taken together. But when you look at the states individually, some of the states range from a 2% increase, which isn't that high. That's, that could be error. But some of the states were 24-29% increases. So it clearly something seemed to be going on in those states. That didn't seem like a small fluctuation in some of those states.
So what do you think are the drivers that's affecting homeschooling? We know the pandemic was one of them, but what was it about the pandemic? And what was it about the gradual growth in homeschooling even before the pandemic? What's this underlying drive towards more homeschooling? Because nobody would have said homeschooling is almost as significant as private schooling, 10 years ago. 10 years ago, this wouldn't have been part of the conversation. Now, you were correct in your opening observations that homeschooling is one of the 3 pillars of the alternatives to the public school: homeschooling, charter schooling, private schooling, and they're all roughly in the same ballgame. So why has homeschooling sort of made a move when the others have not?
So I think there are several factors that could potentially be at play. Even before the pandemic, we knew from surveys that asked parents about their motivation for choosing homeschooling over various other options, is that parents' attitudes and reasons for homeschooling were changing. So where maybe religion and things, concerns of that nature were more prevalent early on in the 21st century, things started to shift to where people were most concerned about safety and academic concerns as well. They were worried about what their kids were or weren't learning in schools, and they were worried about safety in the schools. And safety could range from anything from bullying to, you know, gun violence in the schools, et cetera.
Well, there's these headline stories about these mass murders. And you know, the statistician comes along and says, oh, this is extremely unlikely. It can't happen at any school, very likely. But nonetheless, it gets so much press attention that the parent may say, this could happen here. And I don't want my child in that kind of an environment. So I think those scary stories can have an effect, as well as the day-to-day bullying that goes on in school.
Right. I think also during the pandemic, of course, everybody had the stressors of the pandemic. People were home. So we were, many of us, working remotely. And the opportunity cost for schooling your kid from home changed a little bit during that time as well, right? We were already home. Everyone was working online. It became more feasible. Technology, I think, also has played a role, you know, during the pandemic, but even more so now. The people are more willing to accept learning online, working online. We have a lot more support from technology for those things now. Zooming, you know, being able to video conference with people from all over the world if you want to. So that is definitely a factor. I think we saw also a lot of growth during the pandemic and since in Black and Brown homeschooling. So they had all the same concerns and factors that everyone else had, but we also had the added concern during that time of Black Lives Matter. You know, there were concerns of culturally relevant instruction, low expectations for minoritized students in traditional schools, et cetera. The Latino community, I've been working some with them, trying to find out more about their homeschooling. Language is a big thing for them, language immersion and having their students learning dual language. And that is a reason that they homeschool as well. So I think there are a lot of factors going on here that could have, you know, contributed to the growth.
Let me just add one more that you hinted at. But, you know, 20% of the population is now working at home, and that was more like 5% before the pandemic. So it's been a huge increase. It's now quite permissible to have a job where you don't ever go out of the house, and yet you get your work done. Well, if you're working at home, it's much easier to supervise your children's education than if you have to leave in the morning every day.
Right. Absolutely. And anecdotally, we see more single parents home. We hear of more single parents homeschooling because the opportunity cost, again, that may have been something that was very difficult to pull off before, when you had to have an income and leave the home and homeschool the child. But as you say, if you can do all of those things at the same time in the home, then this opens up the opportunity for homeschooling for single parents. And of course, we haven't even touched on, you know, ESAs and public funding that is kind of coming online that may be driving some of this as well.
Well, so let's talk about ESAs for a minute. Those are education savings accounts. This is a policy that's been developed in a few states where they actually say, if you're homeschooling your child and you have various expenses, you can actually get a tax break on that. And it's a pretty handsome tax break if you're eligible. There's some complexity in applying for it, and not as many people have applied for it as could apply for it, but it's still early days on that. And I don't think this is a big force right now, but it could become a more important role downstream as more states adopt such laws and as more people learn about such laws. So how much of an effect do you think the ESAs are going to have as we go forward?
I mean, I do think, depending on access for homeschoolers, because that is kind of up in the air in a lot of these states, but depending on access, I think it will drive.
You mean access to the funds?
Access to the funds, right.
It depends, because some of these funds say it has to be used to hire somebody, or it has to be used to pay for tuition at a school or something like that.
Correct. So Arkansas recently passed a universal voucher. They call it something else, a universal ESA. And the way that homeschoolers are impacted by that is not until 2025. So they roll it out over 2 or 3 years, and different groups of students are eligible in different years, and the homeschoolers aren't eligible until 2025. So we have yet to see what that's going to do for Arkansas students who may choose to use that funding for homeschooling. Alabama just passed a similar universal ESA. However, in Alabama, the total amount for students, I can't remember the exact amount, 7,000, 9,000, something in there for students who qualify for the ESA, and they can use that at their local private school. But for homeschool students, they only get, it's either 2,000 or 2,500 per student, maximum of 2 students. So the family can only get up to $4,000, period, whether you have 2 students homeschooling or 5 students homeschooling, right? So there are some restrictions, and there's variation in access to these funds for homeschoolers. Some states try to exclude homeschoolers altogether from these options as well. So it's unclear, but clearly the more people that have the option, if they're on the line towards homeschooling and money is a barrier, then depending on the amount of money, it could be enough to push them over the line into homeschooling. However, it could also push them towards private schooling if there are more private school options. So we'll see how it works out.
So despite the fact that homeschooling has been on the increase, there's still a lot of criticism. A lot of people think it's not ever going to be able to prepare people for society, for learning how to relate to other children and so forth. So what does the homeschool community say in response to those criticisms?
I mean, they push back hard against those critiques, obviously, and have for years, you know, and that's part of the reason that I think we need more rigorous research and just more research so that we can base some of our policies on evidence instead of some of these stereotypes and, you know, the stereotypes that we repeat about homeschoolers that if they were ever true, I think are less true today. But we definitely need more information.
Well, it's like everything else. It's probably true of some and certainly not true of everyone. And so what the average is, but do we have any data on what homeschoolers, people who are adults today who were homeschooled in the past, and do they, how do they differ from other people? Do we know anything about that?
Yeah, so we do have some information, again, from surveys. I'm working on a project right now with Albert Chang at University of Arkansas. We're looking at some survey data that asks a nationally representative sample of people about their schooling experience and then their outcomes in their later life across all of the sectors. But in there are homeschoolers. And so we can see homeschoolers compared to people who came out of other sectors. What's interesting about that work is that switching in and out of homeschooling is extremely common. We think it's extremely common today, and that this is really dynamic, people moving in and out of homeschooling. So the stereotype of, you know, people homeschool all of their children for all of their education is just not true. And these data on these people for their later life outcomes, I think they're age 20s to 30s, we can see differences in their outcomes by how many years they were homeschooled. So even within the homeschooling communities, people who were ever homeschooled, we see variation in outcomes, but they look very much like, you know, other people.
So you don't see as much difference as the stereotype would have you believe. So, you know, you say there's a lot of movement in and out. Do you know why that is? What are the reasons why a parent will say, maybe you should be homeschooled next year?
Right. I mean, it can be all kinds of things, right? So you have the examples of parents, military families who move all the time. And so it gives them some stability to homeschool instead of moving their kids in and out of schools. You have examples of students who are actors or musicians or athletes who travel a lot and need a more flexible situation. People are bullied and public school is not a good fit for them. Sometimes the children have special needs that are better met in a different environment, maybe at home, or a hybrid setting instead of full-time at the local traditional public school or private school. So you have all of those things going on. And then certain kids, even within the same family, have different needs. And so, you know, a child may do better at home when he's younger or older, and the other children in that same family are perfectly fine in a public school. So parents are able to make some really dynamic choices in a lot of settings. Some parents, right now, are able to make choices that best fit the needs of their kids at that time.
So the United States is a little bit unusual. If you look at European countries, they almost either they say no homeschooling at all, or they load it down with such detailed restrictions that they make even the New York in the United States look very open and generous to homeschoolers. So Why is it that the United States is friendlier to homeschool education than other industrialized societies?
You know, I think probably the state control and the variation across states has something to do with it. When we looked at on the Homeschool Hub, we have information about when homeschooling was legalized in various states. And there were a few outliers, a few states that legalized homeschooling very early on, the early 1900s. But most states started legalizing homeschooling in the 1980s. And so one or two states did it. And then there was pressure on all of the other states then to kind of follow suit. And you know, it took a decade or two to get everyone on board, but, you know.
So why did that movement begin in the 1980s? Where does it come from? What's the spark plug that sets off the homeschooling movement at that point?
You know, there was a lot of pushback on factory model schooling. Some would say also that it was kind of a white flight response to school desegregation. There were a lot of things at work there during that time that it's unclear exactly to me what caused that. You know, individual needs, people just started moving away from the traditional public schools.
There was a move on the left too called unschooling, that somehow you were better off if you just let kids grow up willy-nilly. And so it was mainly we associate homeschooling with a conservative perspective, but it's also had a libertarian or progressive dimension to it as well.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Early on, there was a researcher named Van Galen who coined the ideologues and the pedagogues, right? And that you had these two people at different ends of this, or these two groups at different ends of the spectrum with very different reasons for doing the same kind of thing. But you're right. Yeah. Unschooling. And, you know, I think it's a little more structured than willy-nilly, but yes, it's, you know, it's more student-centered, student-directed. Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole spectrum.
Right. So, you know, there's also the Homeschool Legal Defense Fund, which has been around since, I think, maybe the 1980s. I don't know when it was founded. You may know.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And they are a very well organized group. And I'm wondering what the secret to their success is.
You know, I think that they consolidated power very early on and have remained kind of the main spokespeople, the main spokes organization for homeschooling in the United States, at least at the policy level. I think too that the parents were very, very active within that organization. They were able to activate the parents to push back on a variety of legislation. I was on the phone with a state the other day that's looking at updating, I'm calling it modernizing, their homeschool regulations for their state. And they said, you know, the very first thing that they told me was, don't make the homeschoolers mad. So, you know, the homeschool lobby has a lot of sway in these states, and people know to kind of be careful because they, you know, and to be fair, they have been fighting this battle for the last 40 years.
Well, I think they have an idea that really works, and that is they promise every homeschooler that they will defend them against prosecution for homeschooling if they will only give them $100 a year.
Right.
And I don't know what the number is now, if it's still $100 or not, but if you can get $100 a year from quite a few people, all of a sudden you've got enough for a very sizable organization.
Right, right. Crowdsourcing, absolutely.
So that's been, I think, one of the things that's helped there. But there is still no constitutional right to homeschool, is there?
No, I don't believe that. I mean, we have had a few Supreme Court cases looking at homeschooling and private schooling as well. But I don't think that it's legally protected that you can homeschool.
You know, we got a constitutional right to do something other than send your child to the public school. That was in the Pierce decision back in 1925. And we've had the Amish case that was decided, the Yoder case in the 70s, I think, where they said the Amish don't have to send their kids to high school. But they didn't say anything about elementary school up through eighth grade. So those are the two pillars of the constitutional framework, and homeschooling has managed to survive amazingly well without that constitutional protection. So that's another interesting dimension to this growth of the homeschooling movement. Now, let me ask you finally, are you going to be tracking some of these developments on your website? How is your website going to develop and going forward? What are the directions you plan to take it?
Yes. So right now it is just the hub with the 50 state pages and then a few special interest pages. We are going to be in phase two expanding that. So we're going to add additional special interest pages. We're working on one on the intersection of special needs students, special needs policy, and homeschooling. We're coming out with one on Black homeschooling, one on Latino homeschooling. We've also been doing, someone asked about North Carolina has very high homeschool participation. We dug into that a little bit to see if maybe it was the military bases. There are two very large military bases in North Carolina. Maybe that was some of the factor. So we've been looking into that, and it looks like the growth is in the rural areas. So we're looking at, kind of some urbanicity issues as well. Age is another thing we've been digging into. Anecdotally, a lot of the growth was in younger grades, but we dug into that data that we have. Not all states have disaggregated data by age and grade that we can look at, but where we had it, we looked, and there's, the pattern, there is something of a pattern, but, it varies from state to state. So these are all things that we're considering and we'll be adding to the hub. Also, obviously, we're going to be keeping a close eye on this 23-24 participation trends and seeing if this growth continues as more states report and, what we find going forward there.
Well, Angela, I think you've come up with a great idea for homeschooling, to have one place where you have lots of information, staying away from all the debates about it and focusing on providing people with information. I think this is a great idea. So thank you very much for joining me on the Education Exchange.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Angela Watson, a professor at Johns Hopkins University. She's the head of the Just Opened Homeschooling Hub. I am Paul Peterson. This is the Education Exchange. Please join me every Monday at noon Eastern Time.